Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Long Shot Podcast. I am your host, Duncan Robinson, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Davis Patrick Reed. Davis, how are we doing?
I am great, Duncan. The NBA is back. We are here. It's opening week. Nothing to complain about. Everything's great. How are you?
I'm feeling great as well. You know, you said it. NBA regular season is back. I actually don't love when people say now the NBA is back. I mean, I think it kind of discredits the preseason, not to mention all those guys in the preseason who are trying to like make a job. I was one of those guys at one point. So it's a little bit discrediting for you to now say that the NBA is back. I feel like it's been back for a little while. I mean, we just played 6 preseason games. So I feel like the NBA has been back at the start of training camp. But with that being said, I am ready to officially start the 2021-2022 NBA regular season.
We have spent several weeks on this podcast talking about how the preseason doesn't matter that much. And it does. You're right. This is not to discredit, you know, when if you're fighting for a spot, you were in that position at one point, it obviously matters. But at the same time, you're just, you know, let's call a spade, Dunk. Where you are now in your career, the preseason is for you to get your legs under you, see a couple shots go in, you know, start meshing with your teammates. The real show starts this week.
I've actually changed up my tone and my thought a little bit on this. I hear what you're saying, but anytime the ball goes up, I'm ready to go.
You're just a competitor.
Yeah. I mean, no, it is interesting though, how as soon as the preseason ends, there is a noticeably different kind of approach. And it's, I don't think it's just with us. I think it's kind of league wide in that there is kind of that weird feeling of preseason, in that there's the younger half of the roster that is very, very, you know, locked in. And I'm not saying the older guys aren't locked in, but it's more so about how can I maximize every single rep in practice? How can I maximize every single opportunity in a game? And then there's this weird conflict of then like older guys kind of doing exactly what you said, getting their legs under you. I mean, I think a great example of it is the Lakers, what they go, 0-7 in preseason.
I don't even think they were trying to win.
Yeah, which, you know, if I was a Lakers fan, I would have liked to, you know, maybe seen them get one. you know, you don't have to go 0-7. You could sneak a W in there, maybe one or two of them. But nonetheless, you know, 0-7 is obviously not telling of what they're going to be doing this season. I wouldn't think. Not that I know much, but.
Right. No. I totally agree. But I do think this is an interesting, you said your approach shifts a little bit after preseason. I mean, is it feel like things have ramped up? Like it's go time? Things feel different this week than they did last week?
Well, we have this unique stretch because we had our last preseason game on Friday and then we don't play again until Thursday. So you have these 5 practice days or 5 days where you can practice. And, you know, then it becomes maximizing, okay, how do we approach these 5 days? What days do we get off? What days are we practicing? And obviously in those days, you have to practice hard as well. You know, you don't get a lot of hard practice days during the season because the emphasis is always on games. So really the only time you kind of have this feeling is around All-Star break and right around now. And a lot of it becomes like, okay, well, we have to like really compete in practice because we don't want to come out flat after, you know, being off for 5 days. So there has been a little bit more of kind of that competitive fire in practice, which is undoubtedly a great thing. You know, iron sharpens iron in that regard, or at least I'm a firm believer of that. But I think also it's interesting too, because other teams are on different timelines. You know, you have the games that are played on Tuesday. We're recording this on a Tuesday, so we don't know the outcome of those games yet, but obviously, you know, the worlds will all be watching those two great matchups tonight.
Yeah. How hard are you guys going in practice? Like, I assume a couple days ago, when you have a couple days before your first game, you can ramp it up a little bit more, and then maybe it dies down as you approach game one. But are you guys really getting after it at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's strategic, right? So we have days that are kind of more like get what you need days, where, you know, if you want to get in and get some work in and get some shots up and get a lift in and do that sort of stuff, more of kind of like a personal day, if you will. We have those sprinkled in. And then we also, you know, we've had two really hard practice days where we're locked in on, you know, a lot of 5-on-5, a lot of live stuff, a lot of getting up and down, and a lot of kind of like building a scheme and structure of what it's going to look like, you know, when the ball goes up on Thursday. So it's kind of a give and take, right? And then, you know, because you have the 5 days, and then usually the kind of day before ends up being a little bit more of a mental day, where you really try to approach it with more like strategy of, okay, we've kind of gone through the physical, now let's like really train the mental and figure out, put in a game plan and establish a scouting report and do all those sorts of things. Because it's not very often where you have, you know, 5 days to prepare for a game. Like I said, it only happens twice. So normally, you know, you have a scout that you have to kind of rush in a day before a game, or maybe 2 days out if you get a two day prep, which is pretty unique. But very, very rarely do you actually get 4 or 5 days to really put in a game plan and prepare.
Well, you're also playing the team that you last played in your last NBA game, so you know them pretty well. So I don't know if you need the 5 days leading up to it. But you're talking about the mental side of the game. It makes me think. I saw a tweet today that said Karl Anthony Towns' pregame ritual this year is watching two gorillas fight each other. That's how he's going to get in the right mind frame to play a basketball game. And it made me think, is this something that you should maybe work into your pregame ritual? I know you're a very consistent guy with your regiment. You've done the same thing. You've talked about it on this podcast. You've done the same thing your entire professional career, same shooting routine, and it's worked. Like, let's be honest, it's worked. You're at a good place in your career. But I think maybe in order to dial it up a notch, we need to, you know, George Kittle like famously bangs his head on a wall with his helmet. Cat's now watching gorillas fight each other. I think maybe we need to build something into your routine that just dials it up a little bit.
Look, I mean, I'm open to any and all suggestions. You know, it'd be great if this could be a collaborative think tank between, you know, us two and the long shot community. There's nothing on my mind right now that I'm planning on really integrating into the pregame routine. I mean, honestly, if that works for Kath, then that's fantastic. You know, I think it's different strokes for different folks in sure. Some ways. I don't know if I necessarily see that working for myself, but I will say, like, I've gone through little stretches, you know, where I've kind of added, obviously I watch like film of the team that we're playing or film of myself and how I've kind of played against them. But also even sometimes I'll just watch like highlights, you know, of myself, just like having good games. You know, if I really just kind of want to like get that mojo going, like, all right, like let's pull up some highlights of me kind of getting loose. That's not an every game thing, so I don't want people to think that I'm just like over here just watching hours and hours of my own footage. But every now and then, you know, if I need a little like morale booster or something like that, I'll throw on some highlights.
How many times a week are you going to YouTube, searching your own name, and just going through the videos? Come on, be honest.
It averages out to be under once a week. I mean, I don't know exactly what the breakdown is, but yeah, I mean, I'm not, definitely not like on YouTube. I'll be like, get, you know, grab one of our video guys and be like, hey, can you like get all my makes of me coming off pin downs or me coming off handoffs or me against this opponent, you know, see how I got my shots last time I played them, just like little stuff like that. I'm not really going into the YouTube archives. I mean, occasionally I will, but honestly, I do that more with like you, like with my other friends. Like when you're over, like we'll just search like Davis Reed highlights. And now we have the incredible long shot made video of the Davis Reed High School highlights made by Jason Gallagher, the very talented Jason Gallagher. So every now and then, I probably watch that more than I watch my own highlights on YouTube.
I'm watching that over once a week, easy. Over once a week. Probably not twice, but over once.
Your high school highlights that we 100%. Put together, you watch over once a week.
Yeah. Just to get, it's my version of watching the two gorillas fight each other. It just gets me in the right headspace.
So I've heard that you've actually been struggling to win your one-on-one matchups recently. I know you've made it a ritual to play morning one-on-one at the University of Michigan. Is it a 5:30 a.m. bell? Is that what it is?
Yeah, we're getting after it early with Coach Rafferty, part of the women's staff, Harry Rafferty. He's had my number. I'm just going to call a spade a spade. I played one-on-one with you in Miami. You beat me. It's not great right now, but you got to understand, I've been out of it for a while. It's one thing to just like stand and catch and shoot. You know that? It's like riding a bike. It doesn't leave you. But moving with a basketball, finishing around the rim, and most importantly, getting in a defensive stance and moving laterally are things that your body forgets to do so quickly if you don't play consistent basketball. And so I'm getting back into it. I want you to know that I'm not throwing in the towel. I'm going to get back to a place where I'm competitive.
I'm once again calling on the long shot community to help Davis out and to come up with a phrase other than call a spade, because you've now used that twice in the first 8 minutes of this episode. So please help our guy out with some new vernacular. I'm curious, actually, though, like you were a very good basketball player. You stepped away from the game. What is, in your eyes, the first thing to go? Like from somebody who was playing basketball every single day, working on his game, you had, you know, skill. You could score at all three levels. You could pick up 94. Yeah. Like you could do some different things. We've talked about how you could, you know, split ball screens, get up and dunk with the left, all those sorts of things. But what is the first part of your game to really just disappear once you step away?
Clarification, I could not guard 94 feet. I could never do that. But I appreciate
you. Well, in theory, you were like the energy guy. Like, I'll pick up full, not really actually turn anybody, but it looks like I'm picking up full. I'll pull up my shorts a little bit, you know, maybe slap the floor, clap my hands. Like, you were that type of pickup full. You weren't like actually, you know, Pat Bev, like turning guys in the backcourt.
Right.
Briante Weber turning guys in the backcourt. Shout out to Bree for that one. Bree fans.
He Briante Weber slaps the floor. That guy, he's like, he coined that maybe. No, he didn't, but he does that quite a bit. I'm the stunt at you guy. My least favorite drill in practice was zigzag, full court one-on-one. Oh my God, it was the worst. Like turn the guy as much as you can because I was just not a good defender. But I'll stunt at you. You know, like I'll do a couple jabs. Just try to keep you on your toes. And I usually don't because I'm not an intimidating defender. To answer your question, finishing around the rim. It goes completely. I took pride in my float game in high school. I took a lot of pride. I was not elevating over people. I wasn't getting into the body in my finishes. I was finesse. I was throwing it up. But I was reasonably effective at it. Not at all anymore. So that goes pretty quickly. Touch around the rim. And then getting in a defensive stance. Your body, in what other world do you get in a defensive stance and move laterally? None, unless you're playing basketball and guarding frequently. So honestly, it's like your body forgets to get in that position or forgets how to.
I've actually heard the touch around the rim one. And that kind of makes sense to me just because like it's so much of that is like feel. But I do think part of the touch stuff is like, it's kind of like an innate skill. It's one of those things where you either have it or you don't. Anyways, I would love to somehow capture some of that 5:30 a.m. One-on-one footage. We'll see what we can do to kind of scrounge some up.
I'm in the lab, Duncan. All right, I'm in the lab. We don't need to document the 5:30 footage, but just know that it's me working on my craft. All right, I'm trying to get back.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay.
I want to get back to you YouTube searching yourself, because I just don't believe that you're doing it less than once a week. And it reminds me, the other day I came across a YouTube video. I wish I could shout out who it was. Maybe it was GQ. I think it was GQ. It was Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, and they were doing the Google search questions. So you type in the "is Chris Pratt," and then you get the top results, and he was answering those questions. And so I did that for you because I was curious what came up for "is Duncan Robinson," and I wanted to share this with you. Here are I'd encourage the listeners or the community to try this at home, because maybe I have biased results, but here's what I'm getting. Is Duncan Robinson, first, is a free agent. Second, is Duncan
Robinson. No, I'm not.
Yeah, no. Oh, actually, yeah, I like that. Why don't you
Can I answer? Live answer these?
Yeah, please. That. Is Duncan Robinson a free agent?
No, I am currently not a free agent.
Is Duncan Robinson a good defender?
Good is an interesting adjective. I think underappreciated. Defender, I think, fits a little bit better there. So, yeah, I'll say underappreciated.
Could you even maybe say long shot defender if you're underappreciated?
There you go. I like that.
Is Duncan Robinson married?
I am not married. Not married.
Here's my favorite one. Is Duncan Robinson good?
So is that referring to good at basketball, or is that referring to like maybe being a good human being?
Or just like, hey, Dunk, you good? Like everything okay over there?
Or that one. I could actually answer at least two out of the three of those as yes. I am good over here. I do like to think that I'm a good human being. The third one is really up to the discretion of others, whether or not I'm good at basketball. That's kind of like a relative thing, I would say.
Yeah. I would say so too. All right, here are two more. I'll give you the two more. Is Duncan Robinson related to David Robinson?
No, but I have a special moment for you. When we were playing in our preseason game in San Antonio, one of the very nice ushers in San Antonio came up to me at halftime. She grabbed me. I was like just shooting at halftime, and she was like, "Hey, David Robinson wants to meet you." And she has a mask on, and I couldn't really understand what she said. I just heard Robinson. So I thought maybe she was like kind of making a joke. So I just kind of like laughed and like kind of like turned away. And she like said again, like, "David Robinson wants to meet you." I was like, oh my goodness, like the Admiral, David Robinson. So I go over, and for the first time in my life, I met David Robinson. We had a great conversation. I told him that when I was a kid, I actually had a giant framed picture of Tim Duncan and himself back to back, and it read Duncan Robinson, and it was in my room. I get asked all the time, "Were your parents Spurs fans?" I was actually born prior to either of them being drafted, so wouldn't really make sense. But so no, they're not Spurs fans. But I kind of pseudo became a Spurs fan at one point just because of those two. I will say that. So I met David Robinson, but I'm not related to him.
Wow, you still have that up in your room. I was in your childhood room a couple weeks ago for your sister's wedding, and I noticed that picture was still up. It's a beautiful one, like you said, Duncan Robinson on the back-to-back jerseys. All right, here's the last one for you. Is Duncan Robinson white?
That's a great question. The answer is yes, considering my complexion is white. I do want to say something though, and I've been waiting to bring this up for quite some time, and I recently just leaked it at Media Day, and it didn't catch on anywhere, which I was okay with, because I actually wanted to step into this moment on my own platform to say it, that I am actually part Hawaiian. And it's always been, whenever you do the games like Two Truths and a Lie or Name a Fun Fact, I always resort to I'm part Hawaiian. It's a very small percentage. It comes from my mother's side of the family. I think she's like an eighth, so that makes me a 16th. But nonetheless, I take a lot of pride in my Hawaiian heritage. I've been to Hawaii before. My senior year, we played in the Maui Invitational. And, you know, I would have thought that going back there, you know, being surrounded by my compadres, that I was going to play really well in that tournament. Turns out I didn't really at all. But nonetheless, it was great to be back in the homeland, I will say.
Thank you so much for being vulnerable and honest with us there. I really
appreciate that was a big moment for me.
So really, the answer to that question is you're 15 16ths white.
That's right. That's right. It took me a second to wrap my mind around that one, but I see what you did there.
Wow. Yeah. Breaking news once again on the Long Shot podcast. We're just full of it here.
Do you think Woj or Shams will pick that up? Maybe, right?
I certainly hope so.
Maybe Malik on NBA Today will pick up the fact that I'm part Hawaiian. That would be a special little anecdote that could be a nice coverage piece for me.
You know what? You're right. I think maybe what we need to do is funnel the info. We need to really make sure to blast the information out there just to help it catch fire. Because it's such interesting news that once it's out, how could it not? Hey, so we're talking about practice. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is a clip went around social media the other day of you talking to Ray Allen at a practice, which has to be a pretty cool moment for you, I imagine. You've talked about how he was one of the guys that you looked up to coming up, especially as a Boston Celtic.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up watching him win a championship in 08. Was one of the best moments of my sports fandom. And then also just obviously the way he plays and how he gets open, how he moves. As I got older and started to kind of gravitate towards the three-point line, it made more and more sense to try to emulate his ability. And obviously it would be very hard to ever do that because he's one of the greatest of all time, particularly when it comes to shooting. But just to have the opportunity to step aside with him and talk. You know, I'd spoken to him before. He comes around the facility every now and then and now lives in Miami and has lived in Miami for a little while. He's actually, I think recently became the head coach at Gulliver Prep, which is a high school down here that his son goes to. So it was great to just kind of pick his brain and more than anything, just kind of listen. You know, he has so many different stories. And the thing that always sticks out to me with him is just how diligent he is when it comes to his routine. And, you know, I had heard him talk about this before through various media coverages, but to have him talk about how he always took it as borderline disrespectful when people would say like, oh, you have this incredible natural ability to shoot. And he would always resent and reject that because it discredits all the hours and hours and hours of work that he put into his craft. And he said it again. He talked about, you know, to Max Struess and myself about how, you know, the skill that he developed was just exactly that. It was developed. It wasn't something that was just ever there for him, but, you know, something that he worked at over and over again. And, you know, his routines and showing up early to games and lifting on game days and running on the treadmill, all that stuff is like so well covered and so well respected and for good reason. It was cool to just kind of pick his brain on it. And, you know, for me, I'm always trying to kind of add little things, tidbits here and there of advice that I could potentially add into my routine or maybe get some ideas or tips on stuff that I should do.
Did he shoot at all with you? Did he get any up?
No, he did not. But I'll tell you what, he looked ready to go through an 82-game season. I mean, the guy stays in elite shape. I think now it's a combination of running and biking. But my goodness, he's still in just top tier shape, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, he just kind of always struck me as one of those guys who's just like a worker.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, can we get to our Reddit question of the week? You got anything else you want to talk about before then?
No, that's about it. I would love to get to the Reddit question of the week. I got a feeling this one's going to be a good one.
It is going to be a good one. I think, you know, like we talked about, the NBA is beginning this week. And so what I want to know from you, Dunk, or actually, I guess what I should say is what OK Barber 6 wants to know is who is the coolest player in the league right now? So headed into the 21-22 season, if you had to pick someone as the coolest in the NBA. And I'll let you sort of take that in whatever direction, any explanation you want of why, but who is the coolest player in the NBA?
I'm going to give three answers because I'm making up my own rules here.
Kind of a cop out, but okay.
No, fine. But I'm going to describe each one. One is a hometown answer, and I'm going to say PJ Tucker.
Ooh.
Now he's in my locker room. I have a newfound appreciation for everything that he is. I mean, his sneaker collection is folklore at this point. Obviously, everybody talks about it. He has more shoes than you would even ever think to imagine. Even knowing that he has a lot of shoes, he still just blows you away with how many shoes he has, to the point where in our last preseason game, I can't remember what I was talking to Josh Richardson during the game because I saw PJ warming up in the same shoes that I was wearing. And from warmups to the game, So like warming up, like layup lines, like 10 minutes before the game. From warmups to the game, he had already changed shoes. And then he changed shoes again at halftime. And I'm like, I just have so much respect for the fact that you can just like cycle through shoes like that and just have so many different flavors and color styles and everything. Like I overthink to the point where like I'll wear the same shoe every single game until they just completely wear thin. And then I'm like, oh God, I have to change shoes. Like this is terrible. He just cycles them through without a care in the world. And it's just like, gosh, that guy is really cool. And he's, you know, doing the fashion stuff. He's at the Met Gala. He's just a cool guy. My second one is Jordan Clarkson in Utah. I'll keep this one a little bit shorter. I love the Dwayne Wade quote that he gave on national television of like, if I could come back in the NBA, it would be as Jordan Clarkson, just dress like fly as shit to every game and then just like check in and score buckets. That's fair. My second one. And my third one is an entirely different direction, and I'm going Robin Lopez. He's had some moments on this podcast. His fantastic Thespians line. But Robin is just, I think he's a national treasure. Some of his quotes from Media Day were absolutely all time, including the one about the Bucks. Basically him saying that he was doing his own research on whether or not they actually won the championship. So those are my three answers, Dave. What are yours?
Those are really good answers, but an absolute snub, in my opinion, is Klay Thompson. Like, how are we not putting Klay Thompson in that group? And now that he's Boat Klay, I just think he's ascended to another level. If I could be anyone in the NBA, it's without a doubt Klay Thompson. The guy is one of the greatest shooters to ever do it. Incredible on the other side of the ball as well. Doesn't need to put the ball on the floor at all, which is documented, right? He's got like the 45 points on six dribbles or whatever, some insane game like that. And he's just seems like the chillest, one of the happiest guys in the league. So I'm going Klay Thompson, but not to discredit your answers. You gave good answers as well. I can't believe I forgot to do this earlier, but you talking about the amount of shoes PJ wore in one game reminds me, we talked before this about what we were going to talk about in this front of show. And one of the things that we hypothesized or threw out as an option to talk about were your goals for the year. And we wanted to just stay away from it because it's kind of a cliche question. It's just you'd answered it in press conferences before, so we wanted to stay away from it. But I wrote down some of my goals for you this year that I forgot to share.
Love that.
And so let's hear. Let me just quickly share those. One of which is I need you to wear five different types of shoes. Five different types. I'm not talking different pairs. I'm talking different styles, different makes of shoes this year. Five is the number.
Okay, can that be the same shoe but a different colorway?
I think so. I'll allow it, but it's questionable. Right. I think you can only do two different colorways that count. Once you get the third, it doesn't count.
I actually have a little something up my sleeve this year from a shoe game perspective. I'm not going to leak what it is just yet, but I have the creative juices flowing. So just stay tuned for that.
All right, good. So hopefully that's a goal you can achieve. That's my first one. Second, you only get one cliche answer per interview. So as many interviews as I can find, I'm going to be keeping a running track, but only one. And this one is a little subjective, I admit. I'm going to be the barometer of what's cliche and what's not, but I am going to hold you to that. One cliche answer per interview, because I just think you're too bright to be giving the same answers over and over again. It's a challenge I'm going to hold to you this year. Third is I need you on league fits at least three times.
I love that challenge. That's a great one.
Which I think is attainable. And then finally, I need more than 15 three-point attempts in a game this year. It's your career high. You did it once last year. The year before that, I think you did it two or three times. 15 attempts. We got to surpass that number this year. I wouldn't even hate us getting around 20.
I love all those. I'm totally here for it. I think that all are within reach. I think the most challenging one will likely be league fits, just because that's not really the lane that I necessarily like to travel in, but I'm always up for a good challenge. So I appreciate you putting forth your goals for me. I'll be sure to print those out and put them up on my wall.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad I got those off. I forgot that I wrote them down, but the PJ Tucker story reminded me.
Let's very quickly get to our long shot feature. This is a great one. Over the weekend, in case you guys were not all aware, the Chicago Sky won the WNBA Finals. They are now WNBA Finals champions. During the regular season, they were just a 6 seed going into the playoffs. They had a 500 record. They were plus 1,800 odds to win it all. And despite all of that, they took down the Phoenix Mercury and are now, you know, have etched their names in WNBA history.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely electric. I was dialed in to really a lot of the playoffs, but especially the finals. It was just high-level basketball, high-level entertainment. Shout out to Candace Parker. She pulled the LeBron, went back home, brought a championship to her city. Just incredible stuff. Courtney Vandersloot, I said this on Twitter. My Twitter account is now just a Courtney Vandersloot fan account because she was electric, just throwing no-look passes, iced game four with one of those jump stop ball fake turnaround fade game. Just it was really, really fun to watch. Good stuff. Shout out to the Sky.
Candace Parker, potential future long shot podcast guest, by the way.
Whoa.
We're gonna try to manifest that by putting it into the universe. Anyways, let's transition to our conversation with Malika Andrews. This is one that I particularly enjoyed. She's incredibly bright and definitely a rising star in her industry. And she took some time to speak to us, which we're very grateful for.
Yeah, and arguably the busiest week of her life. I mean, she's the NBA Today show started this week. She spoke with us right as that was getting kicked off. I saw that she spoke at an ESPN Women event the other day. So she had a ton going on, and she still managed to give us some of her time, which we were very grateful for.
Very grateful for. I think you guys will enjoy it. And here's Malika.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back in to the Long Shot Podcast. We are very blessed to have a wonderful guest with us today. Her star began to rise when she led coverage for ESPN during the NBA bubble. She then served as a sideline reporter for the NBA Finals last year and became the youngest to ever host the NBA trophy ceremony. Now, she is the host of the new ESPN Daily show called NBA Today, which is now airing. And yeah, Malika, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a crazy schedule, but thank you for taking some time.
That was quite the intro, Duncan. I'm ready now.
Love that. You know, we try to, here at the Long Shot, we try to, you know, give our guests a nice little runway, into the interview, and yours is pretty easy to do. You know, you've accomplished a lot, particularly recently. So first off, how's everything going? I know you're in the middle of kind of a move transition.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about life right now.
It's a lot, but I'm excited, right? So moving cross country, I wasn't sure how I felt about leaving New York City. I am from California, but I hear all these people saying, oh, well, like, welcome back home. Northern California, Southern California, very different, little bit of a rivalry, but I am a little bit closer. But it's definitely been a whirlwind just getting ready for the show that I'm so excited to share with NBA fans, but then also trying to make sure, you know, with coronavirus, all these furniture deliveries are delayed. So it's like you get this one estimate and then it's like, oh yeah, we'll see you have a place to sleep in January. So it's sort of like trying to get all of that together at the same time. It's been a lot, but it's been worth it so far.
Yeah, I will say, obviously, we're still in the midst of the pandemic, but the ramifications of it continue to extend its tentacles. Mm. Everything, you know, chip shortages, furniture, yes. Like it's just everywhere.
Which is, I know that's like the least important part of this whole thing, you know, me whining about when furniture is going to be delivered, but it's crazy to see just how far, like you said, it reaches.
No, for sure. So, you know, I gave you a little intro, but I also don't want to discredit, like, prior to this kind of rise that you had starting in the bubble, like, you had multiple other stops. You're incredibly qualified. But I am kind of curious how, within the last year, you know, you show up at the bubble, you're doing all the live coverage there, and then now, a little over a year later, you have your own show on ESPN. How has that, just kind of this last year and a couple months, been, just from where you're sitting?
It's honestly been a little bit of a whirlwind. It's been a little bit crazy. Sometimes I have to pinch myself and say, oh my gosh, is this really happening? Is this really coming together? I think it's funny to think of the last 2 years, and I know you feel this, Duncan, when you look at the NBA season, because it kind of just feels like one long season, trying to remember, oh, did that happen 2 years ago? Did that happen a year ago? And like you said, I think I did make stops right before the bubble. I was at ESPN for a year. See, I'm trying to do the math stuff still before that. And then I worked in newspapers before that. But I think the thing about the bubble, at least for me in my career, and I think some of the young guys in the NBA felt this too, is that it was so insulated, right? And it there were so few people there that it gave me kind of a chance to showcase all the different aspects of this job all in one place. I'd never done sidelines before, but I knew how to report, right? I had never done as the volume of television that I did before, but I'd done it a couple of times. And so it's sort of like for the young players in the NBA who were going to give up a whole bunch of stuff, come to the bubble, and that's it. That's all there is in there. And so you saw these young guys sort of break out in the bubble that maybe you didn't see before because of that type of environment. I think, you know, I'm a 5'7" woman. I have very little in common with you 7-foot NBA players, but I think in that sense, that's what the bubble was like for me. And so while I appreciate you not wanting to discredit sort of everything that I did before, I do think the bubble really was a launching pad for me. And yeah, on the one hand, it took preparation and work and all of that, but also a little bit of luck to be entrusted with that assignment and get to run with it. And I think that sort of served as a springboard for me. But you still got to pinch me when you say I have a show on ESPN. That's, to me, that is still something that is so wild and so crazy and so exciting that I get to share it with, oh, hey, this is the guy who I just revered in college, in Adrian Wojnarowski, and now he's on a show with me 5 days a week. Like, okay, cool.
Nah, it's honestly incredible. And, you know, from all accounts, you know, we've interacted periodically, but from all accounts, it couldn't be happening to a better person. So congratulations. Nice. But I'm curious, because I've kind of gone through it in a different way, in that all of a sudden, all of these new opportunities start coming at you, and you find yourself in these situations that never in 1,000 years you thought you would be in. And something that I've kind of talked about on the show a little bit is the importance of gaining reference points, of little moments throughout your career where, okay, like, I just achieved something. Now, you know, maybe later on down the line when there's some adversity that strikes, like, I can call back on this moment and be like, you know what, I'm prepared, I'm ready, I've earned this opportunity. I'm curious if, like, for a player, like, we have an off season, we can kind of settle down, step away, have some perspective, especially now with how, you know, the NBA news cycle is, it's almost like the off season for you is the live season. Like, everything is going on all the time. So I just wonder, how do you kind of gain that perspective to kind of step away and be like, all right, I just went through my first NBA season, I just hosted my first award ceremony, you know, these sort of things, instead of just not having to always just be like, what's next, what's next, what's next?
It's hard. I mean, how do you do it? Is it all in the off season, or do you, you know, is there days in the regular season where you kind of find that moment?
I've always kind of described it as those reference points of, like, yeah, it's almost hard to tell when they come by, but, like, right, little moments for me that are significant, and they're not always the ones that are, like, significant to the the public's perception. For me, is how it is. Like, people are like, oh, you played in the finals, this, that. Well, actually, what was really big for me was, like, playing against my hometown team in the Eastern Conference Finals and being influential and, like, moving us forward. That is what I really remember as, like, okay, this is something I can build on.
I think sometimes the really big moments that people see also line up with the really big moments for myself, like the NBA Finals trophy ceremony, I think was one of them, right? I think that was one that folks from the outside looking in, appreciated, but I don't know that I've had a cooler moment in my career than the feeling I had standing in the middle of your guys' first round opponents last season, the Milwaukee Bucks. But sorry, it wasn't.
No, you had to bring it up. It's all right.
The trophy ceremony. It's water under the bridge. Doing it again next year. You guys are. It's going to be great. I'm excited to watch you guys. But there's also things like I was thinking back the other day. ESPN sent me to Paris for the international games, and that was kind of a wild stretch because I was so excited to be in Paris and I went for 4 days. I love it there. It was awesome. And I flew back and Kobe Bryant died the next day. And so it was this just pendulum swing of being so excited about this assignment that it wasn't the most meaningful game. It was a little bit lopsided at the time. It was the Hornets versus the Milwaukee Bucks. And it wasn't that game. It wasn't really about the game. It was just about getting entrusted to do those things that are kind of a little bit different for a company that is so big and that has so many incredibly talented people in it. I think that I'm a person who definitely needs to work on not looking too far ahead, not looking at, okay, that was nice. I'm going to pick myself apart, but let me just look at what I have to do next. I'm getting better at it. I think that the blessing and the curse of the news cycle that you mentioned and how quickly it moves. And one thing I'm excited about with the daily NBA show is I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I am the person who watches back the entire hour long show and just picks apart me stumbling on this one word or not setting my fellow panelists up for the best success or an interview where I could have phrased a question a little bit more differently. One of the things about having a 5 day a week show is you have to move on. It's like playing in a series in some ways. And again, like a little different, but you have to move on. You can't dwell on the last game because there's another one and it's coming the next day. And so I think that that's sort of a new challenge for me that I'm still trying to figure out, to be honest with you, because I am the person who thinks back over and over and over again about that one teeny little thing that I'm not even sure anybody else noticed, but I notice and I don't give myself a break on it. And I have to get better at that.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're preaching to the choir on that one, Malika. I feel you. And we do these episodes once a week.
Yeah.
So we're like the NFL. It's like you have a bad game and then you got a week to think about it. So then you can really dwell. And I think, you know, we've referenced your quote unquote meteoric rise. I think it makes sense, right? Like you were thrown into the bubble, your first time kind of to the general public being on TV. Mm-hmm. It's like now all of a sudden you have millions of people not only watching you, and I'm sure you feel that pressure. How could you not? But then you're getting feedback in real time if you're on social media or if you're checking news stories. And that's also new to you, I would imagine,
right?
At that point.
Right. I mean, do you remember when it was new to you, Duncan? Like the first time you started to get that instantaneous feedback and how that changed your thinking?
100%. I was actually at Michigan. This was like still even like early, and I had Twitter and I like shot it well the first like 3 or 4 games. And I'm like, you know, feeling myself, people in my mentions, all this sort of stuff. And then I just go through this stretch where I can't make a shot and it just, everything goes down the
tube. Everything
goes away. Go back to Williams, get out of here. I can't believe it. You should be cut. Whatever, all sorts of stuff. And then from then on, I realized like, even if you're listening to the good or the bad, it's pretty much all toxic. So I was just like, you know what? I'm done with Twitter. And I try my hardest to block it out. As you probably know, it's unrealistic that you're going to be able to create like a total barrier, but still nonetheless.
I try really hard, you know, to just turn on, because people are, I feel
Cold world.
Feel for you guys, right? Like I experience it on a, you know, a fraction of what you guys do, you know, to have 200,000, you know, followers or whatever versus 2 million or, you know, 20 million for some guys, you know, it's insane. People are mean. And so you're right. Like you can't get too high. It's fun sometimes. And I did all the turn it off. So you only see the people who you follow that can all that stuff, but you can still find it and it still creeps in. And it's tough, man, because especially when you find the thing that you were already thinking about yourself, even if it's not that big of a deal, but if it's like, oh man, oh, someone else did see it. And so and that feeling, like figuring out how to turn that off. I mean, that's a whole other rabbit hole, but it's hard. And so I think though, having that, I try to keep that in perspective when I'm covering these stories of guys who, you know, they're going through it. They're fans who feel a certain way about decisions that they're making. We're seeing it play out in two really high profile ways with the Brooklyn Nets and the Philadelphia 76ers. And I do try to hold, while it's my job to provide the facts surrounding that, I do try to hold a space for, man, that feeling though, like you're going through it. And so I think you have to bring empathy to this job, even if sometimes that means there's still things that you disagree with or things that are hard truths that need to be brought to the table, especially around the Kyrie situation. It doesn't mean you don't have empathy for someone who's trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. And I think recently in your coverage of the Kyrie situation, I personally feel you've done a really great job of kind of towing that line between honest reporting and presenting the facts and also in cases your own opinions of the facts, while also maintaining, you know, you are a trusted confidant of players and you have relationships with players. That's just the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of navigate those spaces of understanding that, okay, when the lights come on and I'm on camera, I have a duty to the public and the fan bases, but there are many cases where I'm interacting with these players when the lights aren't on. And how do you maintain not, you know, maybe exposing a side of them, and not that you're like out to get anybody, because obviously we know you're not, but there is a definitely a give and take there.
Right. I think, you know, you and I, Duncan, we're not friends, but we're friendly. Right. And I think that's the fine line, is that I aim to be, you know, friendly and kind and empathetic with, because we're all people, right? And this is fun. Like at the end of the day, this is basketball and this is supposed to be fun. It's hard. It has high stakes. It has a lot of money that's involved in it, but it's a sport and it's supposed to be fun. And so I try to bring that into the locker room when I'm building relationships with you guys. And I think that I've been relatively successful kind of towing that line between, you know, making sure that we have this like really lovely working relationship, but it's not like, you know, we're hanging out on, well, I was gonna say on the weekends, but like that's when half the games are. So we definitely are. But I think that right now, in so many instances, it isn't that hard. But right now as a world, we're in sort of a hard place. And so that's made it so that there are conversations or truths that have to be brought that weren't 2 years ago, 3 years ago, before a pandemic, that weren't 10 years ago, maybe they should have been, when race relations weren't quite in the foreground the way they are now. And so I think that first and foremost, my duty, it is to the public in terms of, we're in this space in journalism. I was reading a column yesterday and it was actually about politics, but we're in this space now where it's no longer one for one is balance. It's no longer you need to give voice to X side and Y side and that equals balance if Y side isn't factual. So it is my job to give someone the space to present their opinion. We can use the Kyrie as an example, right? We are going to play the clips of him speaking out about how he feels, because it is nobody's place to say your feelings are invalid. However, it is my job to say the science and facts contradict X. It's my job to say, Nicki Minaj, you can say that your cousin suffered some sort of issue around getting the vaccine and there are side effects, but by and large, that has found in studies over and over again not to be true. I have empathy for the people who the guidelines have changed so frequently. At first, pregnant women were not supposed to. It wasn't safe yet. And now it is. But it's my job to keep up with that and present that. So I'm never going to say someone's feelings are invalid, but I am going to try to bring that other side. And that's a dance. I'm not always perfect at it. And that's when the social media stuff comes in and all this other stuff comes in. But I am coming from a place of trying to do right by people and trying to do right for people. And I think trying to keep that in perspective, I work for a network that is in part entertainment, but it's also to inform. And I take the inform part really seriously. And I think that's why I have and maybe you can speak better to this, but I like to think that's why I get along with players is I think they see that. I'm not trying to get anybody, but I am trying to help make the general consumer of the game smarter.
No.
Here, take that word vomit.
No, absolutely. It's really interesting because you started that off with saying it's just basketball. It's supposed to be fun. And then you
and go then 20
in,
minutes right. later.
No. But you go and you take it to this place where you feel and it's interesting because I necessarily would not have thought this, but you feel that you have to be in some ways an expert as it comes to vaccines or as it comes to like otherworldly events, which is, you know, people look at you and like, okay, you're a basketball reporter. You cover the NBA. But in reality, like it's really interesting to hear you talk about this because it seems that you feel like you have a much deeper responsibility than just that.
I love basketball. Like, don't get me wrong. I love basketball. I grew up going to Oracle Arena. My father is the biggest Golden State Warriors fan. And when people ask me if I still have fandom to the Golden State for the Golden State Warriors, my answer is I'm just a fan of my dad not being sad. I'm a fan of my dad not being sad. And so when they lose and my dad's like, hi. Yeah, they lost. And I'm like, oh, gosh, can you guys just not lose so he's not sad, except when you play Duncan Robinson in the Heat or something like that.
Right.
But I love journalism. And I got into this because I watched sports growing up. I love sports. But my college newspaper, the only opening they had was in sports. And so I was like, cool, I could do that. And I'll just kind of keep doing that. And subsequent opportunities opened up in sports. So when I got to the New York Times, what I loved is that their definition of sports was so loose. I mean, I covered the Stormy Daniels, Donald Trump saga because it played out at a golf course and that was quote unquote sports. sports. And so I loved that. And then coming to ESPN, it was a different challenge for me to have sports be more in the foreground. And I love it. I love that it's fun. I love that it's light. I love that it can be an escape within this kind of insane world right now. But I do really appreciate the opportunities when I do get to go into something else because it kind of combines all of my interests in this little pot. But sometimes it's just about the free throws or the jump shot or the pick and roll. And I'm good with that. Like, I like that too.
No, that's a great, I mean, the ability to be able to navigate in between the two, I imagine is kind of like a dream come true that you can wear multiple hats and, you know, feel like you're fulfilling that purpose that you have set out for.
I think you just have to be curious, right? If you're curious, you're a good reporter. I mean, and you should be curious about the world. It should extend beyond whatever, politics, basketball, soccer, food, whatever it is you cover. You just have to be curious. So sometimes
I like it. Well, I'm curious about NBA today. Can you give the listeners a little bit of insight of what they can expect when they tune in every day?
Yes. You on the show, right, Duncan?
Of course. It is a home and away agreement that we have. So yeah, I have agreed to come on.
That's Duncan's home away from home. Just kidding. I'm really excited about sharing this show because I think I've said this probably it's becoming like a catchphrase almost, but I do think it takes so many parts of so many sports fans' favorite shows. I think it has the discussion and analytical side of it. I think it has our analysts up at the touchscreen, up at the hoop, recreating shots, going through exactly, you know, we're going to pick apart this play and what needs to happen in the future. Also, we have Adrian Wojnarowski breaking news on the show day in and day out, because this is a, you know, it's a nonstop news train in the NBA. But I think the fact that it's fast paced, it has the news element, it has the film breakdown element, it has the interviews from your favorite players element. It's really exciting. And Chinne Agumike, Richard Jefferson, Kendrick Perkins, Vince Carter, Adrian Wojnarowski, and Zach Lowe, I think, and Ramona Shelburne, I think, are some of the brightest and best in the business. You talked about me being a trusted voice, I guess. I learned how to be that, I think, from a lot of these people. And I think that from a basketball perspective, Kendrick has won a championship. You know, I know fans, you love him or hate him, but he's been there and he's done it. Richard Jefferson has won a championship. Love him or hate him, he's been there and he's done it. Vince Carter is one of the all-time greats. And so to hear them break down the game, they do it better than so many do. And I'm really excited. You know, first week, we have a lot of all-stars joining the show to chat about their season, their outlook, plus seeing the way all these big stories play out. And then we get to the games. And like, that's the best part, is we get to break down the games. And it's going to be fun.
I'm not a first week guy, you know. I'm a 2 or 3 month in guy.
Yeah,
you
right.
Know, I don't make the first week cut. It's all right. I get it. It's all good.
But I'm here the first week. That was the. It's like, all right. How are we going to do this? How are we going to break this down?
Appreciate it.
You didn't give yourself flowers in that lineup, so we'll do it for you. You're there also, running point.
There, is, yes, you know, I exist.
The show is in good hands, and it's daily, which means you get to give it your all on Monday and then move on, and you don't have to think about it.
And give it like mostly it. My all on Tuesday and sort of my all on Wednesday. No, just kidding. Yes, I'm going to try my very best to sort of that, but getting that, because I had an NBA schedule, right? I went the later half of the day, games. Now it's the early, this is at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. So that 6 a.m. wake up call is something. We are getting used to that. We need some big face up in here, Duncan. That's what
there
we need.
There you go. I'll see if I can cut you a deal, because the prices are outrageous.
The prices are steep, man, but you know, we'll work on that. But no, I'm really excited about the show. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I have to, the show's going to look different on day 60 than it will on day 1. And it's going to be a journey, but it's going to be a fun one. And I still get to be on the sidelines. So I get to come and see you guys and see you play. And that was really, I think so much of this league is you got to be around, right? Everyone knows everyone here. So that was important, and I'm excited about that part too.
I love it. So Malika, this is the long shot. So before you go, we like to give love to the underdogs, the under the radar. I just want to quickly get, if you had to pick a team to like surprise people, come, you know, a dark horse to make a run this year, who would it be?
Oh man, a dark horse to make like a serious run, or like a
I don't want to hear like the Nets.
I'm Lakers, excited.
Bucks, Lakers. Bucks. Those ones.
I mean, you guys are not even blowing smoke. You guys are a really interesting team with Kyle Lowry.
That's a good answer.
Seems a little like pandering, but I'll allow it.
Sure. So. But that actually wasn't my first thought that came to my mind.
Okay, fair enough.
So I am actually, if you're talking about teams to make it like far, when you're looking at the upper echelon of the East, there's always a team, you know, the Knicks and the Hawks were risers last year. I think you guys are kind of primed to be a riser this year. I'm really interested to see Charlotte. I think LaMelo is so interesting. That doesn't mean I think that they're going to be the Eastern Conference finals or representatives. But I think that LaMelo is a guy that we all should be watching. I think that he is, when we talk about the next generation of stars, I think he's right at the top of that pack. And so I want to see what Charlotte can do. I think they can make the playoffs. I think they can.
I think people are going to be buying League Pass a lot just to watch Charlotte, honestly, mm-hmm. just because of him. He definitely has that sort of impact. All right. Well, we don't want to take you too much longer. Thank you so much.
You want to see me get my COVID test?
Yeah, right. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. I know you got all sorts of stuff going on in the middle of a move, starting a new show, and you know, many things in between. So thank you for coming on The Long Shot, and we look forward to having you on again soon. So be on the lookout for that.
I look forward to coming back soon. This is a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, gentlemen.